Namaste, good evening. I've been reflecting in my own practice this whole principle of stimulus response, of how something happens, we automatically have a response to it. Sometimes it's unconscious, sometimes it's conscious. And after leading yoga this afternoon, I was very calmly, very mindfully walking back to my room. And there was a weird noise inside the trash can right out here. And I moved toward it, and I brought my head down, and suddenly this squirrel exploded right out of the trash can. And I got to watch the response to the stimulus. I jumped about 3 feet in the air. And then remarkably, it all kind of settled again. So I'd like to talk tonight about some of the fundamentals of practice. But I'd really like to explore with a thread for tonight's inquiry of exploring two core teachings from the Buddha. The first, where he said, mindfulness of the body leads to nirvana, or liberation. And the second, where he said, nothing whatsoever is to be clung to as I or mine. Such a fascinating inquiry to hold these two together. The practice of mindfulness of the body, awake to the aliveness of sensation. And then to remember this core teaching that nothing is to be clung to as I or mine. What happens when we embrace that as a practice? So there are four elements that I'd like to talk about tonight. The first is the art of relaxation. Now, how is it that we can consciously embrace relaxation as part of our practice? The second is the art of paying attention. And with that, the art of paying attention to how you're paying attention. The third is the art of investigation. How do we actively investigate this phenomena arising out of the body? And the fourth, to talk a little bit about what is real in everything we're investigating. What actually do we know to be real? So you might, as you listen tonight, as part of an inquiry into being in the body, to include your body as you listen. You know, right now, what are you feeling inside? Are you aware of any areas that feel tight or loose or easy? Is there any lightness in the body? I've noticed for myself that it takes a huge amount of effort to prepare for a retreat. And I would imagine that there's been a lot of doing to clear the decks for 7 days where you can be fully present to yourself. And I would imagine for the last few days that you've been paying your dues. You've been slogging through swamps of torpor, putting up with swarms of relentless thoughts, withstanding barrages of cravings and fantasies, enduring doubt and self-judgment attacks. And in all of that, you may find yourself beginning to settle. And what I love about this time in the retreat is we're now moving into the belly of the retreat. There's a collective settling that can begin to occur right about this time. And we can really begin to explore what it means to relax. One of the first retreats I went on to with a guru from India, he said, now that you are on the bus, you can put down your bags. And we really are shifting from doing to being. All the work that you've done to get here, all the work that you've done to cultivate a sense of sustained attention is being reinvested into your practice. I've noticed for myself a mistake that I make when I say, I'm going to do a meditation retreat. That's not it at all. really what is happening is the retreat is doing you. We're engaging into a design of this retreat, which has been around for a couple thousand years. We're drawing on a tradition that has informed and inspired and freed generations upon generations of practitioners. And of course, in all of this, my mind still thinks it's in control. I remember the first time I was in a supermarket and I saw one of those carts where they have the space for the little kids with the steering wheels on them. And I saw a little boy thinking he was steering his way around the supermarket. I thought, that's me. So when we explore relaxation, I found in my own practice that when I shift from the narrative or discursive thinking to the actual experience inside, there are certain places in my body that can help to trigger a more of a relaxation response. So if you like, you might close your eyes. I thought it might be nice for it to do a little collective inquiry into relaxation. There are a few key areas in the body where there are kind of ganglia of muscles and nerves that respond to attention. One is to imagine your forehead smoothing out, just to sense the sensations that arise from there. Can you feel and relax the base of your tongue down into your throat? What happens when you do that? If you have tension in your jaw, if you bring the tip of your tongue to touch the roof of your mouth and to hold it there, you'll find that your jaw will go slack. For some people, feeling the aliveness in the hands is a powerful entree to the body, to simply make contact with pulse, vibration, warmth, tingling. For some, a conscious sensing and softening into the lower belly. And for others, to feel the soles of the feet, to sense down the whole length of the body and make contact with the soles of the feet can create a shift. Can you sense this cumulative shift in just a few minutes of guiding your attention inward? This shift into perhaps a sense of receiving the moment through the senses. This shift from hypervigilance to a quality of resting and presence. If you like, you can open the eyes, or you can remain with the eyes closed if you prefer. Our life is filled with so much doing. Commitments, relationships, responsibilities, contracts. It's very easy to transfer that doing into a retreat and to become a type A yogi, to make sure you get to all the retreats, to learn everything you can in the Qigong and yoga so you can use it at home, to write down everything in the Dharma talks so you don't forget it. It's great to apply effort, but it's also possible to turn a retreat into kind of a grim self-improvement project. The story of someone who goes into a bookstore and says to one of the employees, "Can you tell me where the self-help section is?" And the employee says, "Well, I could, but wouldn't that defeat the purpose?" So you're practicing relaxation on this retreat. And it's a strange kind of discipline to train yourself to relax. And oftentimes, when you really focus on relaxation, you can sort of recognize old beliefs that are there, that if I relax, I'll lose my motivation and I'll just sink into a swamp of indolence. If I don't work hard, then I don't deserve the benefits. If I don't push myself, I'll never get ahead. But relaxation is actually one of the most important elements in cultivating an optimal internal environment for transformation and for liberation. James read a beautiful piece the other day, and I wanted to highlight just a few pieces from that because it's one of my favorite readings. It says that happiness cannot be found through great effort and willpower, but it's already present in open relaxation and letting go. Only your searching for happiness prevents you from seeing it. It's like a vivid rainbow which you pursue without ever catching, a dog chasing its tail. Wanting to grasp the ungraspable, you exhaust yourself in vain. As soon as you open and relax this tight fist of grasping, infinite space is there, open, inviting, and comfortable. So relaxation is something to investigate. And there's a fine line between relaxation and sloth and torpor. You may have had one of those meditations where you go to brush something off your shoulder and you find out it's the floor. When relaxation arises, we tend to fall asleep. So finding that middle way is quite challenging. When we investigate the tiredness, the heaviness, the sloth and torpor that arises, sometimes it's biological. It's purely feedback from your body that you're exhausted, you're depleted, and you need more rest. That's valuable feedback. Sometimes we find that the sloth and torpor that arises in relaxation has an emotional quality to it, that there's an unconscious way of numbing out. And for many people, when the going gets tough, they take naps. We find ourselves just sort of losing energy when we encounter something unpleasant coming to the surface. And sometimes that sloth and torpor can be a very interesting sign of a shift in brainwave activity. As you shift from the narrative into more of an embodied sense, you can find yourself in brainwave states that are very close to sleep. And yet, when there is awareness in those brainwave states, it's a beautiful place to be. So some of the strategies as you explore that edge of relaxation into sleep can be when you find yourself on that place of going a little bit under the surface, you can brighten your attention. You can shift your attention to sounds. You might open your eyes, bring in a little more stimulation, but notice if you can at the same time cultivate that sense of relaxed, open awareness. You can stand at your place to allow that weather system of sleep to pass through. So relaxation is a doorway. It helps you shift out of the judging mind and into a sense of receiving. So you want to relax, but don't get too relaxed. I was once leading a retreat with another teacher, and we had these microphones. We had a boom mic, and the person I was leading with, you know, had the microphone. And she kind of led the meditation, and at one point there was this boom, and I looked over, and her forehead had come forward and hit the microphone. She tried to make it look like she was having a spiritual awakening, but. It really didn't work. So from this place, this inquiry into relaxation, it leads to our second piece around paying attention. There's also a quality of paying attention, of kind of a willful effort. And as you have been paying attention, as you've been training yourself to kind of sustain a moment-to-moment sense of what's happening as it's happening, chances are you have a more refined appreciation of not noticing what's happening. Of all the different times, all the different ways where the mind has wandered, where different states have come and kind of taken over, and you've lost a sense of the here and now. I once had a recumbent bicycle. If you're not familiar with them, you're, it's like you're sitting in a seat and you kind of pedal out in front. If you haven't tried one, I highly recommend it. It's kind of like the peak experience on a recumbent bike is when you're going downhill at 35 miles an hour sitting in a lawn chair. It's an incredible feeling. I highly recommend it. But as I would ride around on my recumbent bicycle, I would pay attention to not die. So I would sort of notice how people would notice me. And some people would notice me and stare or point. And I could see how some people, they would kind of look at me, and I could watch something going on in their brain. It was something like, a lawn chair with pedals and wheels does not exist. And I was invisible. And I would see that happen again and again and again. Because I was not in their reality, I didn't exist. So I pay a little extra attention to those people. But we all do that. We discount what's happening because we don't have a frame of reference for it. So as you explore paying attention, it's very interesting to notice the different flavors of not paying attention. So in this practice, in order to pay attention, you use an anchor. You have an anchor in the senses, the breath, the sounds, the feeling tones in your body. Now, these are really simple but not easy instructions. And you might notice how the mind is called away by different energies, different weather systems, different forces. There's the weather system of aversion, of anger, ill will, judgment, blame. And when you're caught in these states, it's impossible to be present. When the mind is lost in the weather system of wanting, of planning, of craving, of sensuality, of fantasy. When you get lost in all the different flavors of anxiety and worry and restlessness. When you get caught in those states of sloth and torpor, the heaviness, the sleepiness. When you get caught in the weather systems of doubt, that ruthless inner critic that completely separates you from the living experience inside. There are other energy systems as well. I love to reflect from time to time on the eight worldly winds, these energies that pull us off center all the time. The hope for happiness and the fear of suffering. The hope for fame and the fear of insignificance. The hope for praise and the fear of blame. And the hope for gain and the fear of loss. You can get lost for days. You can get lost for a lifetime in these different energies and how they will pull you away. And it's a miracle that we wake up at all. These forces can be so strong. And part of why we need an extraordinary environment like this that is designed completely and fully to support you in waking up. And not just the way the days are designed, but the fact that we're doing this together creates a powerful force field to wake out of these very powerful forces. So when we pay attention, we become aware of a cascade of different experiences, of sensations, of a feeling tone to those sensations, of all the different thought forms, all happening, all at the same time. And you might, if you like, to close your eyes again for a moment, just a brief reflection on this practice of paying attention. when you close your eyes, what are you noticing right now? Can you sense the energetic presence, this undifferentiated energy without a name? Can you sense this quality of Vedana as James was describing it, this automatic interpretation of our experience of energy as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? Can you sense even more intimately the different zones in your body that may fall under these categories of unpleasant, pleasant, and neutral? Can you sense the arising of thought forms? And out of those thought forms, different emotional states, different beliefs. And can you sense your relationship to all of this, to everything that is changing, how you're holding it, the attitude in your mind, a sense of who you are in relationship to all of this? So much happening all by itself. And you might again deepen the breath and let the eyes open, or feel free to remain with them closed if you prefer. There's a wonderful chain of causality that I find helpful. To recognize that out of this undifferentiated field of energy, sensation arises. That sensation has a felt sense of a pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. And when we're not aware of that pleasant, unpleasant, pleasant, neutral, it automatically forms into a thought. When the thought goes unnoticed, and that thought repeats itself again and again and again, that thought calcifies into a belief. A belief is nothing more than a repetitive thought. If the belief goes unnoticed, that belief manifests as a habit. If the habit goes unnoticed, it becomes part of your character. And if you're not aware of it being a force in your character, it becomes your destiny. So there's a question of what level do you want to hang out on? We're most comfortable hanging out in the level of thought, as we're mostly trained in this kind of Western model, I think, therefore I am. Most of us have some belief that our bodies are primarily here to make our heads portable. We can hang out on the level of beliefs. That can also be a little mentally exhausting after a while. The invitation in this practice is to come back to the primary elemental experience of here and now. To bring your attention back to the body, back to the direct experience of what's happening inside. Pat spoke earlier of being a contemplative artist. And when you look at all the different ways that you can be present to the here and now in the body, there are myriad choices. There are many, many different ways to explore. The strategy can range from a narrow focus to an open focus. If you think of awareness as light, you can take that light and narrow it down like you would take sunlight through a magnifying glass. And by focusing that light through the magnifying glass, you can burn a hole in things. So you can take awareness and narrow it down and see very, very precisely into what's happening. You can also imagine if you're standing next to a big, big window, a pane glass window, where you can just sort of see the totality of the whole landscape. And from this range, from narrow focus to a more spacious, open focus, you intuitively get to choose how you pay attention. As a contemplative artist, you can narrow your attention. And this is particularly helpful when you feel scattered, if you feel over-emotional, if you're unfocused, if you're riding a strong emotional wave, if you're gripped by anxiety, to narrow your attention to a narrow field, perhaps a specific part of the breath, perhaps to narrow your attention to the exact precise experience of sound vibration. The result of that focus will be a deep calming, a cutting through of challenging mind states. So you may find that there are times that to really concentrate the mind, if you do walking meditation to slow it down, to count your steps, you will find over time a quality of calming, a quality of collecting your attention to the here and now. And then there are times when you may feel more present, more centered, more of a sense of connectedness to the aliveness of here and now, where you might hold your anchor more lightly. You might become more aware of the flow state. You're more aware of what is shifting and changing and moving. And there's a capacity to experience the foreground of your anchor and at the same time to hold an awareness of the background, of what's changing. And there may be times when you're feeling deeply, deeply rested, where the mind has a kind of a calm state, where you might open your awareness even wider to sense the nature of awareness itself, to sense awareness as the sky and the sensations as they rise and fall, thoughts as they rise and fall like clouds taking shape, moving across the landscape. The general recommendation, what I have found helpful for myself, is to start with the more concentrated, narrow focus. As you gather attention, as you establish more of a sense of noting, more of a sense of this non-judging awareness, there's more of a natural, more of an organic shift to more of a sense of space. But at any time we're exploring one fundamental practice of shifting from the narrative to the experience, shifting from the story to the immediacy of what's happening right now. And so as we're paying attention, there are times where the thoughts and the sensations, the mood states, They're like Teflon. They're just passing through. There's a sense of being the witness, just being an effortless observer. And then, of course, there are times where our experience is more like Velcro, where there's a stickiness to what is arising. It doesn't seem to pass away. There's a sense that they're permanent or semi-permanent states. And so what do we do when things don't move through so easily? And this leads to the art of investigation. I'm fascinated by what happens in this shift from the narrative to the inner experience. And not just for myself, because it's such a profound shift in my own identity, but as I've explored and worked with others over the years. As an example, one time on retreat in one of the interviews, someone came in and they had been struggling with obsessive thinking. this person came in, they said, I just can't stop thinking about work. I have this problem with my boss, and I feel like I'm on a hamster wheel. I keep chewing on the problem, and I just keep coming back to it again and again and again. I just can't shift it. So he was hanging out on the level of thought forms, hanging out on the level of just the repetitive thinking. And so we shifted our focus to the body, moving from the narrative to the experience. So I asked him, when you think about this issue, can you locate the felt sense? Can you locate the sensations on the inside? And he thought about it for a moment. He said, it's everywhere. I feel tight. I feel my stomach is tight. My throat is tight. I feel like I want to throw this chair out the window. As we explored that, we investigated through two lenses. One lens was identifying it, recognizing it. And as we explored the shift from the narrative to the experience, I asked him to locate as specifically as he could where he felt that on the inside. And so he sat with it for a while, and he began to identify there were some primary areas where he felt this sort of burning, hot, jagged, and he found more and more adjectives to describe it. And so we didn't try to fix it. We didn't try to change it. That was part of the practice, was really to say hello to it. Just to imagine that you're just sitting next to it on a park bench. This was a little enervating for him, but he found that he sort of could be with it. And then we shifted to explore the experience through another lens. And we looked through the lens of kindness, through the lens of compassion. And I asked him, when you make contact with that raw, jagged feeling through the core of your body, right up into your throat, and when you offer it a little bit of kindness, what shifts, what moves? As he sat with it for a long time, first he said, nothing is shifting. And then suddenly he felt a little bit of space, a little bit of movement inside. And again, without trying to fix it, but to, as Tara said, to attend and befriend. Over a period of time, he described how it felt a little more spacious. It didn't feel quite so hot. It wasn't a dramatic release. But it was a shift in his relationship to that experience. And at one point I asked him if he wanted to move into a little deeper, more intimate exploration with that. And he said, yeah. I said, when you feel this sort of changing but still kind of hot, sticky place inside, is there a sense of what it needs? So long pause. And he said, it just needs to be acknowledged. So I invited him to acknowledge it and to watch how it might shift and change and move. And it shifted. And again, it wasn't a dramatic release there. There wasn't any angels that appeared, no heavenly music. But there was a shift in his relationship to it, where he realized that the thought form, the obsessive thinking, had a whole emotional quality to it, an emotional quality of fear, of anxiety, and it lived inside. And as he attended to it on that level, in the body, through that lens of recognizing it, the lens of compassion, something quite powerful shifted. As the saying goes, shift happens. So there's a a saying that a lot of massage therapists use as their byline. It says, your issues are in your tissues. The body is communicating to you all the time. The weird feeling in your stomach when you say yes to something you know you should have said no to. The lightness and sense of ease you feel after having a difficult conversation that went really well. The surge of warmth when you see a friend that you haven't seen in a long time. This morning in our first meditation, I was spontaneously thinking about one of our political parties, and I felt rising heat and tendrils of sensation moving through my body. So I'd like to share this reading with you. It's rather long, so I'd like to suggest we kind of do it as a meditation. This was written by a Chinese doctor. And it can be said as the voice of the body, the voice of the felt sense in its desire to be in relationship with you. So you might hear this voice as the voice inside. I am the pain in your head, the knot in your stomach, the unspoken grief in your smile. I am your high blood sugar, your elevated blood pressure, your fear of challenge, your lack of trust. I am your hot flashes, your cold hands and feet, your agitation and your fatigue. I am your shortness of breath, your fragile low back, the cramp in your neck, the despair in your sigh. I am the pressure in your heart, the pain down your arm, your constant hunger. I am where you hurt, the fear that persists, your sadness of dreams unfulfilled. I am your symptoms, the causes of your concern, the signs of imbalance, your condition of disease. You tend to disown me, suppress me, ignore me, inflate me, coddle me, condemn me. I am not coming forth for myself, as I am not separate from all that is you. I come for your attention, to enjoin your embrace so I can reveal my secrets. I have only your best interests at heart as I seek health and wholeness by simply announcing myself. You usually want me to go away immediately, to disappear, to slink back into obscurity. You mostly are irritated or frightened, and many times shocked by my arrival. And from this stance, you medicate in order to eradicate me. Ignoring me, not exploring me, is your preferred response. And more times than not, I am only the most recent notes of a long symphony, the most evident branches of roots that have been challenged for seasons. So I implore you, I am a messenger with good news, as disturbing as I can be at times. I'm wanting to guide you back to those tender places in yourself, the place where you can hold yourself with compassion and honesty. If you look beyond my appearance, you may find that I am a voice from your soul, calling to you from places deep within that seek your conscious alignment. Wherever I lead you, My hope is you will realize that success will not be measured by my eradication, but by the shift in the internal landscape from which I emerge. I am your friend, not your enemy. I have no desire to bring pain and suffering into your life. I am simply tugging at your sleeve, too long immune to gentle urges. I desire for you to allow me to speak to you in a way that enlivens your higher instincts for self-care. You are a being so vast, so complex, with amazing capacities for self-regulation and healing. Let me be one of the harbingers that leads you to the mysterious core of your being, where insight and wisdom are naturally available when called upon by a sincere heart. So your issues are in your tissues. Every emotion, every thought resonates inside. The more you relax, the more you pay attention, the more you will discover, the more you will be able to listen to that still, small voice within. In the art of investigation, we've talked about this acronym of RAIN, to recognize what is there, to sense if you can allow or accept, and then to investigate with kindness, to be intimate with what is there. And for me, I see this practice of investigation is this technology of looking inside, of recognizing with intimate detail what is arising in this felt sense, in this play of raw sensation, of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. To sense how you're holding it. To call on this lens of empathic compassion. That, in many ways, is the lubrication that allows that inner voice to arise in a way that we can hear what it has to say to us. As your retreat continues, you will no doubt ride innumerable waves. And no doubt you will keep looking closer and closer, more and more intimately at this matrix of sensation and feeling tone and thought and mood and emotion. Over these days, your body may relax more. Your mind will settle more. Your concentration will develop and deepen. And you will continue to see and feel things you haven't seen and felt perhaps in a very, very long time. This is where this technology of investigation, of relaxing, of paying attention, will take you into ever-increasing subtlety. And in this deepening distinction between the narrative or the story and your direct experience, there are two elemental questions. Well, what is happening right now? And can I be with this? This first question of what is happening leads to a question of what is real. There's a classic teaching story of a woman walking down the road at night, and she sees a snake coiled up in the road, and she's terrified. And she runs back to her hut, spends the entire night traumatized by that near encounter with the snake. The next morning, she very tentatively ventures out of her hut and goes down the road again, and she sees that that snake was a rope that someone left on the road. And the question is, how many snakes in your life are actually ropes? That becomes more and more clear as we relax and pay attention. As I was thinking about that, I actually thought, well, the corollary of that would be, how many ropes in your life are actually snakes? That too you will discover in your practice. There are so many waves that we ride on a retreat like this. The very first Vipassana retreat I went to, I was in a kind of a tortured time in my life where I needed to figure out what I was going to do with the rest of my life. And I was counting on this retreat revealing my Dharma for the rest of my life. And I would be sitting in utter despair. And then suddenly would think, I'll write a book. That's it. I'll write a book. And then for the next 3 hours, I'd be riding this wave of euphoria of this incredible life I was going to create. And then somehow that just sort of crumbled. And I would be back into a sense of kind of despairing emptiness. And then I would think, I'll travel the world and I'll do photography. That's it. And then I would be on another euphoric ride as I would plan out the magnificence of that adventure, and somehow that would crumble as well. And over so many retreats, I have found myself, the best way I can describe it is chasing lights and rainbows, of looking for some exalted permanent state of never-ending happiness and aliveness. And I've noticed that it keeps changing. My state keeps changing. When I had that realization on retreat, eventually, where I realized all of these states, the highs and the lows, they don't stop. It was a very powerful insight. Robert Frost said this, "In three words, I can sum up everything I've learned about life. It goes on." So in the midst of change, what is true? What can you actually count on? And besides two wonderful books available at a local bookstore near you, you find out through your own experience. These two questions, what is happening right now? Can I be with it? These are the essence of the practice. What is happening right now is the question that leads to wisdom. To pierce through your story, your embellishments, your preferences, to come in contact with what is actually here is a liberating factor. Clear seeing, which is the translation of Vipassana, clear seeing. The question, can I be with it, leads us to the wing of compassion. The capacity to hold your experience and in non-judging, kind and compassionate presence. No matter what your practice, whether it be a narrow focus, whether it be an open focus, these two questions at any given time can help you to shift from the narrative, the story, to the experience. What is happening right now? Can I be with it? Once on a month-long retreat, the first 3 or 4 days I had one huge insight after another. Just, it was like scales were falling from my eyes. It was really quite wondrous. And I shared a fear I had in my interview with the teacher. I said, I'm afraid that I've used up my quota of insights, and the rest of my time is going to be just sort of blank. The teacher I was sitting with said, well, let me think about that. He said, I think the chances of that are roughly zero. But I came away from that interview with a deep, deep intention to keep my awareness in the body, to not try to get anywhere, to not chase any lights, not to chase any rainbows, not to invoke any particular state of consciousness, but to sort of invest my faith, if you will, into this practice. To renounce figuring things out, to renounce my desire for insight, and simply trust being in my body. And I began to see in my experience, only borne out through my direct experience, that that is indeed the practice. That is the alchemy for insight, the alchemy for transformation, the alchemy for liberation. To trust resting your attention as deeply, as intimately as you can in the direct experience of here and now. To put aside fear, to put aside greed, to rest in presence. Thoreau said, happiness is like a butterfly. The more you chase it, the more it will elude you. But if you turn your attention to other things, it will come and sit softly on your shoulder. And you may find, as you turn your attention to the here and now, you'll find that butterfly sitting softly on your shoulder at times. So back to these two statements of the Buddha. Mindfulness of the body leads to nirvana, or liberation. Nothing whatsoever is to be clung to as I or mine. The Buddha went on to say, whoever has heard this truth has heard all the teachings. Whoever practices this truth has realized all the teachings. So perhaps you can feel the possibility here to be awake in the senses, to be fully present to the arising and passing away of phenomena, clinging to nothing as I or mind. And this is the doorway to the mystical experience, the doorway to the mystery. As Sri Nisargadatta once said, so eloquently, wisdom tells me I am nothing. Love tells me I'm everything. Between these two, my life flows. So if you like, let's close our eyes. We'll close with a short meditation and a final reading. In these moments, you might, again, just sense what it means to relax. Can you smooth out the forehead? If you were to relax the base of the tongue down into the throat. To make contact with the aliveness in the palms and fingers and thumbs. Is it possible to soften the belly? To feel the soles of the feet? you might sense in these moments as a contemplative artist. The possibility of a narrow focus. Perhaps of just for a moment to rest your attention on one specific point in the senses, one part of the breath. You might sense as well this quality of foreground, background, a light holding of the anchor. And perhaps if just for a moment, this sense of spacious awareness, sensations, thoughts, like clouds. To be intimately present to the aliveness of the body. To cling to nothing as I and mine. In this inquiry into form and space, we'll close with this poem called Living in the Body. Body is something you need in order to stay on this planet, and you only get one. And no matter which one you get, it will not be satisfactory. It will not be beautiful enough. It will not be fast enough. It will not keep on for days at a time, but will pull you down into a sleepy swamp and demand apples and coffee and chocolate cake. Body is a thing you have to carry from one day into the next. Always the same eyebrows over the same eyes and the same skin when you look in the mirror. And the same creaky knee when you get up from the floor and the same wrist under the watch band. The changes you can make are small and costly. Better to leave it as it is. Body is a thing that you have to leave eventually. You know that because you have seen others do it. Others who were once like you, living inside their pile of bones and flesh, smiling at you, loving you, leaning in the doorway, talking to you for hours, and then one day they are gone. No forwarding address. Namaste.